There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday, and lots to do over the next couple of hours. Of course, you're a big part of the show. Reminder, if you're new to the show, or even if you just don't pay attention in detail, the phone number and the text line, they're the same. So you only have to remember one string of numbers. You don't even have to remember them. You can right now put them in your contacts in the phone for FM Talk 106.5. It could be this show. It could be Plain Gardening with Bill Finch on Sundays. It could be the Outdoor Show on Saturdays. It could be Scuttlebutt on Wednesday night. Listen, we do 55 hours a week plus of live local shows. They'd love to hear from you as well. The phone number, 343-0106, 343-0106 for a phone call. Also works for the text line that's already popping right now as I get the show started. So 343-0106. And if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, of course, that gives you like it's a digital Leatherman or a digital multi-tool, all kind of stuff going on there. Show schedules, all our social media feeds with breaking news. The first place our podcast posts are there. Traffic maps, weather information on there, show schedules, also streaming the station, of course. And that talkback feature on the front page, if you'll see that microphone icon, if you press that, lets you record a message, emails it to the show, and I can play it back here as well. All right, good. So we got the housekeeping, the programming notes and all that stuff as we get started with the Friday edition of Midday Mobile. And I knew it. I knew it when I came in here. Terry is the first one in. I thought about this, that the second I would get in here, yesterday's show would carry over. And Terry has texted, I've got you some recipes for breaded monkey. So we started the Monkey Ranch thing, which, by the way, I saw on social media last night. I think we coined it here, not monkey breeding facility. But I said Monkey Ranch. And I saw the Monkey Ranch term trending on social media, so we made a difference out there as well. So good. So that's we'll push that to the second hour, because this hour, Representative District 96, you know him, you love him. It's Matt Simpson. Good to see you.
Happy to be here. Always a pleasure to be on the show, Sean.
So you departed Montgomery last night, and how late did y'all stay last night?
We actually got out relatively early. We got done with session about 12:30. I had a few meetings that I didn't leave till about 5 o'clock last night to get home about 6, 7:30. About 7:30 is when I got home.
No, it's because the pacing was fast. I wrote in my notes today, did anybody have whiplash from the House gambling votes that went through? It moved very quickly, Representative. The way things pace, I watched this. I mean, obviously you're there. I'm in the peanut gallery. But for pacing in Montgomery, that was fast.
It was. I mean, you know, it's fast, but it's been a bill that's been in the work for, 12, 14 months with Representative Blackshear and Representative Andy Witt and the committee that's worked on that. They kind of focused on this. It was one of those situations where they said, look, if you want to speak against the bill or you want to speak on it, here's your opportunity to speak on it. But don't filibuster. You know, this isn't a Republican versus Democrat thing. This is the votes came from the Republicans. The no's were Republicans on there. So it was one of those. Don't try to stop something that's coming through. Speak your piece. Say what you want to do. But don't just waste time for the purpose of wasting time. Let's get to a vote.
Okay. But is this idea of like getting it through before groups can get the ear of representatives? You know, because there's a lot of different ways that people are lined up against this, too. There's people that are just morally opposed to it. There's people like me that you'll have to hear this hour that worry about the structure being a gambling utility for the state, a triopoly or... Is it, you hear this, that had to get through fast before people like me got somebody's ear?
No, that's not the case at all. There were people all in ears the whole time. There's a lot of forces that were against it. There's a lot of people that were for it. You look at a situation where you had, at the end of the day, the Poarch Creek Indians were against it, Alpha was against it. Southern Baptists were against
Interesting
it.
Interesting bedfellows, yeah.
Alabama Policy Institute was against it. The Attorney General was against it. There was a concentrated effort of people that were against it. I mean, I think that's just the nature of what it was. The reason why they put it the way they did was to put it to where this was the only issue that we talked about. We didn't want to call a special session. We have to go through a special session.
Because some of us thought that that's what would happen, right? A special within a regular session.
That's what I was anticipating. And you know, for lack of a better term, we kind of did that. This is the only bill we focused on for the past 2 weeks.
Right.
So it's one of those of, you just want to eliminate any outside chatter, not from the public, because the public was able to contact. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a ton of outside chatter as far as, hey, if you vote for this on this bill, then I'll vote for you on this bill. Let's just put the bill up for itself and not play the horse trading game and just focus on the bill.
Okay, let's talk about, and actually, I guess, as I've been telling people, the bills, plural here, mm-hmm. HB 151 and 152. I know I've done it a couple times, but it's good to have you in here to do it as well. For people to understand how this works, why there's two bills, it's, you know, I told them it's like Anaya's Law was mm-hmm. with a constitution, a CA, and then supporting, right? That's what the two bills do. One changes the Constitution. One says how it works.
The Constitution of Alabama requires a vote of the people on gaming. Anything to change with the gaming on a statewide bill has to come from the vote of the people. So what this does is this 151 was the bill that will be the constitutional amendment that will be on the ballot to allow access for gaming to be whether the people want gaming or not. 152 was the structure of how gaming would be. So it's basically like, do you want gaming? Yes or no? That's the voice of the people. If they choose yes, 152 will be the parameters.
How it would work.
How it would work, yes.
I mean, is there a chance of having a split on those? You know, I mean,
there was a chance. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
somebody saying, yeah, I'm for 151. I'm for, a CA here that would allow gambling in the state. But this 152, I don't like it.
I think there were a few people like that. I think 152 dropped a few votes from 151. I think people were saying, yes, I'm fine letting the people vote. But no, I don't like this particular format or this organization, the way that it's set up in 152.
I'm going to quote you yesterday on Twitter. You said, today, the Alabama House of Representatives voted to allow the people an opportunity to vote on lottery, casinos, and sports betting. I successfully added an amendment to prevent casinos from coming to Baldwin County. It doesn't matter to me where you stand on gaming. I believe that the citizens should have an opportunity to vote on the issue and have their voice heard. This should be a vote of the people of Alabama, not just politicians in Montgomery. So in this, you say you're for the people voting, but you say specifically you don't want it in Baldwin County.
I don't want it in Baldwin County. I'm going to vote no in November. I'm a no in November. I just don't think it's the role. We constantly get this.
So you're a yes, no.
I'm a yes to allow the people to vote. I want the people to have their opinion, to have their opportunities. People overwhelmingly come and say, we just want the right to vote. Why can't we vote on this? Why can't we hear this? I don't like I'm always a big proponent of the bottom-up structure, from the grassroots structure, of let the people have the opportunity to have their voice heard. I'm tired. You talk about special interests. You talk about mm-hmm. all these people getting involved. Things get cloudy when it's special interest involved, when personal perspectives of what casino goes where, who gets control over what casino. Let the people make the decision. If they don't want it, you know, in 1999, 25 years ago, they voted it down when it was just the lottery. I don't perceive that the public has changed that much, that now they want lottery, sports betting, and casinos to be here. I think that it fails in November. But I don't want to be the filter to say, no, I know better than you. I'm going to tell you how you're not going to get an opportunity to voice your opinion.
But you have been putting some like changes in it, even though it's something you're saying to vote no. You're putting changes in. Number one, the Baldwin County part. Number two, we're talking about maybe 7 to 10 facilities. You said I think it was for like Macon and Lowndes County or something. You said if they can't move that to another.
Right. Now, and I said Baldwin County can't come to Baldwin County because I represent Baldwin County.
Sure.
So that's my focus. That's my attention. But what I wanted to do in the statute, there was the possibility for the licenses to transfer. Mm-hmm. So under the license right now, there are three PCI casinos that are going to, you know, the Atmore, Wetumpka, and I think Montgomery is the third. And then there are seven new licenses that are coming. Those new licenses are going to be one in Greene County, one in Birmingham within Jefferson County, the Jefferson side of Birmingham, one in Macon County, one in Mobile County, one in Houston County, one in Lowndes County, and one that they haven't determined yet that's going to be the northeast quadrant of Alabama. It's got to be
on our board. I thought that was kind of the jewel, too. I mean, I remember the when they were looking for the compact as far back as Bentley's time, this idea this jewel was somewhere in northeast Alabama. That was a big deal, I guess, getting people to come across state lines.
Yeah, it's right on the Georgia line. It's got to be on the Georgia line through there. So what I wanted to do was make sure that the bill, there wasn't the wool pulled over the people's eyes. Because I don't want to issue, hey, you're voting on this bill to say there's seven licenses that can be issued in these seven counties. And then they vote and then something happens. You'd be like, oh, well, never mind. Now it's coming to Baldwin County. Oh, we lied. It's not coming to one of these seven counties. We're moving it from Houston County, and now it's going to go into Shelby County.
Gotcha.
Now it's going to go into Madison County. Let the people be aware of what they're voting, but don't hide the ball on the back end to say, never mind, we can transfer this. So we've eliminated the transfer process through this. You can transfer licenses. Like if you own a
different company, but you have to stay in that county.
But you have to stay in that county.
Yeah, here's one of my rubs, and I know this is idealistic versus pragmatism, which exists when you're in the legislature. But idealistically, and I've been harping on this for years and years and years, what about saying it's a free market system? And saying, you know what, here there are this many licenses, and they can be bid on. And so, if you're selling timber on a national forest, mm-hmm. right, the public trust, that belongs to the people, mm-hmm. you take bids mm-hmm. to see who's going to pay the most to cut those trees.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like if this is this rich opportunity to run gambling in the state of Alabama, we should be able to squeeze the most dollars out of people bidding on it.
Exactly. And that's what we did. These are all open bids.
PCI
is the only one that they're getting the Northeast Corridor one. They were against the bill because they wanted the Jefferson County
mm-hmm.
one. But they said, no, that's a bid. If you want it, you can bid on it. You know, if you've got $1 billion and you want to put a license together, you can do that. That's what the other six counties are doing.
So it doesn't go to the McGregor Legacy Tract people. They don't get it by default.
There's no winners and losers picked in this bill.
So will the state have like an open bid process? Say the highest bidder gets it?
They're letting the Gaming Commission make that determination on all this stuff. And, you know, what we wanted to do was create the foundation of what has the rules they have to play by, and then give the Gaming Commission that will be created the structure of how that will be done. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. We're coming back. More of our conversation with Representative Matt Simpson. And, it was pretty easy votes through the House. Now, of course, what happens in the Senate, we'll talk about that as well. We come back.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Representative Matt Simpson, our guest this hour, and your chance to ask questions at 343-0106. Gambling legislation, plus we'll talk about a couple other issues that have been on the hot plate up in Montgomery. Listen, I'm looking through several of these from Mike and Buddy and others who are saying, well, why not Baldwin County? Like Mike says, I'm a Baldwin County resident, and I am a Baldwin County resident, and I am not alone for a casino here. Buddy's saying the same thing. It shouldn't be up to you. The people of Baldwin County should be able to decide.
That's fair, and that is a very fair attack on this. My concern has always been the welfare of Baldwin County, the concern of we're the family-friendly tourist destination. That's what we label ourselves. That's what we have. You want to come down with your family, and that's what we spend your vacations doing. If you change this up, if you open it up where it's just a blanket, anybody can go anywhere and anybody can do anything, my biggest concern is every casino owner can buy up. They're playing with Monopoly money. They can buy up every condo between Gulf Shores and Orange Beach. There is nowhere else in America that can give you that resort process, that resort property where you have access to the beach and you can go to the water and look, come do gaming here. It changes fundamentally everything we are as a county. And that was a concern of mine. That was absolutely one of the concerns, to make sure we keep our identity of who we are and what we are.
But doing that at the, as a representative of District 96 for Baldwin County versus doing it, I'm thinking about like the medical marijuana thing, mm-hmm. which is that's a dumpster fire in itself. But, I told people, I said it was a pretty good civics lesson the way it's failed now. But beforehand, I said it's good that it says, okay, this is legal in Alabama, but municipalities and counties can make their own decisions mm-hmm. for what's there.
Mm-hmm.
I said that's I love government that's closest.
Mm-hmm.
But this case is not that. I mean, they couldn't say, like, because you could say, well, Baldwin County could make a decision itself to not do it, or maybe by municipality. Orange Beach and Gulf Shore says, no way. But, somebody up in Perdita and Dieter can say yes, or you know, something to that effect.
Well, it's the same situation as if it's on a statewide ballot, like it has to be on a statewide ballot here, you have the entire state voting on it. So let's just say the entire state votes on Baldwin County. If you Baldwin County is one of those seven ones through there, then the people of Baldwin County aren't the ones making that determination. The entire state is saying, yes, we want to put it there. And of course they're going to say, yeah, we got condos down there. I'd love to go down the casinos to come through there. That's not my focus. My focus is the people that I represent. My focus is the district that I represent. And if the people are mad at me, they have every right to be mad at me.
Well, I'm seeing a lot of people now on the text line, too, saying we don't want casinos in Baldwin County, thanks to Matt Simpson.
That's what I believe. I believe my district, the vote, when I talk to people, they don't want the casinos in Baldwin County. So I'm here to represent my district. If I'm wrong in that, they have every reason to vote me out in 2026. But I'm going to go home knowing that I stood for what I believed in and I fought for what I believe the district wants.
Now, well, of course, we're focused on the casino part, but that's just one leg of a three-legged stool. We've got this lottery. Mm-hmm. State lottery. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a crazy idea I've thrown in the mix. Why don't we just privatize lotteries and let companies do that instead of the state having a bureaucracy to run it? But
you're talking my language.
You know, I mean, you know, if you're going to let private enterprises get in casinos and let them do the money, get the license, put up the bond and run a lottery instead of the state of Alabama doing it.
I'm a smaller government guy. I would love the government to get out of this. I was against medical marijuana because the way the government, we called all this stuff happening through there. The medical marijuana stuff is the ABC board on steroids.
Yes.
They just can't get off the ground because they're talking to that much money. That's a growth of government. So my answer is let the people, if the people decide this is what they want and this is how they want to have it, that's what it is. My personal opinion, government should not be in the lottery business. Government should not be in the gaming business.
Shouldn't
government
be in the booze selling business.
It shouldn't be in the booze selling business. I would love to get ABC out, get out of the ABC board. I don't think that's one of the fundamental principles of government. I'm looking for government that provides public safety. I'm looking for government that provides infrastructure. I would say education, but since government got involved in education, we've gone downhill. So the more government gets involved in, the less, in my opinion. I just firmly believe if you can pick up, and this dates me, Sean, but if you can pick up a phone book and it's in one of the yellow pages or one of the white pages, that's a private enterprise. If they can do that, government shouldn't do it. If it has to be in the blue pages, those blue pages should be pretty small. It shouldn't pick up and say, we're going to pick up and do this. Sean, I'll ask you this right now. If you had a letter that absolutely had to get to somewhere within 24 hours or somewhere you had to make sure that it's received by that person, your life depends on it.
Private enterprise. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So why are we relying on government? The more reliance, the more you feed government, the more you give it more power over your lives, it's very difficult to get it out once you give it that power.
What about the third leg too, the sports betting? What do you know about that?
I mean, I know a bunch of people use it. I know a bunch of people, if you look on
the online thing,
I know, look, on Saturday mornings, if you drive to Florida on Saturday mornings, there are people that line up right on that exit one. I heard stories from Tennessee.
Yes.
People line up to Tennessee outside. It's just on Sunday mornings, about 11:55 on Sundays, people are lined up going to Tennessee so they can get their internet provider or it can be pinged to say, yes, I'm in Tennessee to vote on this. I think it's just stupid. I mean, I'm not going to be the ones betting on it. I'm not going to be the ones. But if the people are there and the people are doing it, you know, if that's what the people of Alabama want, I will happily serve what the people of Alabama want to give them the opportunity. But if the people say no, they say no. So that's why I believe in this. That's why I believe in saying, if you want sports gaming, there's your opportunity to get sports gaming. If you want casino gaming, vote yes. I'm going to vote no, but I don't want to be the one to tell you you can't have it.
But we've gone through the frequently asked questions on this show about why they can't be separate, which is a frustration to me. It's a prime example of when people talk about influence in Montgomery. There it is. Mm-hmm. Because lottery is that fullback. It's that John Riggins that's going to knock a hole in the line to bring casino and sports betting through because everybody loves lottery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, separately, I think lottery is a great bet. It makes it through. The others are riding coattails.
And you know what we've been told, and what talked to so many attorneys about this issue. If you put lottery in by itself, if the state of Alabama goes up from zero to lottery, then it allows the current gaming situations to go from slot machines to table
electronic
games.
Electronic lottery.
I'm sorry. Electronic bingo to to table games.
Right.
And so the concern people have, it's the government greed issue of, wait a second, so those casinos can get table games now. We're not going to be able to get a cut of that.
Right.
How do we make sure we still get a cut of that? Oh, we have to attach it to the lottery.
There it is. Coming back, more with Representative Matt Simpson right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good to have Representative Matt Simpson in studio talking about a lot. We spent the first half hour talking about the gambling vote in Montgomery. We'll keep on that, but we got a couple other issues I want to get to. Another Matt says on the text line, said, afternoon, Sean. Special shout out to Representative Simpson. I love the fact that he says just because he doesn't agree with something that he's going to stop the folks from having a say on it. Tell them thanks for giving Alabama a choice on the lottery and gambling. So there it is.
Hey, all right.
And I'm looking at this text line. It's pretty busy. And there's people that say, well, I want a right to have gambling in Baldwin County. But there's just as many people say, you know, thank you for keeping it out of Baldwin County. So
we'll find out. We'll see how they feel. The big poll is at the end in 2026, I guess, right?
Of course, it's got to get through. I mean, we've got to get through the Senate, too. Right. And what's it going to look like there?
That is a complete unknown.
Y'all hadn't talked a little bit?
I haven't talked with you. No. I'm not a sponsor of the bill. I'm not one of the persons on the bill through there. I'm sure leadership has. I'm sure they've had these conversations through there. I'm sure Blackshear has. I'm sure Speaker Ledbetter has talked with Pro Tem President Greg Reed. I mean, I'm sure they've had these conversations, but I'm not a part of those conversations.
Okay. Will they take it up next week? Or?
Oh, I don't. I mean, it's got to go. It's got to start fresh. It's got to go through committee again. It's got to go start
so
all
it's
over.
It's going to be. Okay.
I mean, I don't anticipate that being I just don't know how soon they're going to take it up.
All right. And we'll get to this one I want, because this is actually what I reached out to you the other day, what I wanted to talk to you about. And that is the ethics bill in Alabama. And I have ranted about this for a long time. I appreciated reading what you had to say about it. You said in a story at Alabama Daily News, if you cross the line, we're still coming for you, but we want you to know where the line is. Please, Representative, tell me where the dang line is. I watch these stories and I sit there and go, what are we doing?
You're exactly right. And you're not alone. Sean, I've been a prosecutor. I've been on your show for years. Yeah. I was a prosecutor. Well, I'm still a prosecutor. I'm a career prosecutor. It's in me. It's what I believe. I've prosecuted ethics cases in Baldwin County. I've gone to law school. I've been a lawyer for coming up on 20 years now. Been a prosecutor. I still have to pick up the phone and call the ethics commission and say, hey, can I do this? Can I not do this? That's not a good thing for me with that experience to have to do that. I'm a legislator, so of course they probably answer my call.
Mm-hmm.
What chance does the teacher have to know that? What chance does the firefighter, what chance does the city maintenance worker have to get some type of input on,
Is this beyond de minimis? Where's the break point? What gift can be given?
We get so focused on the understanding of, look what the legislators do for the 140 legislators. We don't pay attention to the fact that the ethics bill covers directly 300,000 Alabamians. By the time you add their extended family, which is included in the ethics bill, you're talking over 1 million people. That's just around 1/4 of our population fall of these ethics laws. And nobody knows where the lines are. They used to do, you know, back 10, 15 years ago, they'd do 20 to 40 formal opinions a year. Now they're doing 3, 4, 5 formal opinions. Formal opinions and where you can actually read it. You can see what they're doing. You can see what their rationale and their vote are. Now they're doing 900 informal opinions. Nobody knows what an informal opinion is. Nobody knows what the rationale, the reason, the answer, or how you can go and guide about it. It's that individual has an idea, but it doesn't have to, there's no thing to say that it has to be consistent with everything across the board.
So, you just hit the word that drives me crazy. I am a rule of law kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And that bothers me, that it would be inconsistent.
That bothers me. I don't want someone to be treated differently in Mobile than someone in Madison County would be treated. I don't like the just trust us through the process. We know what we're doing. There's no oversight of what we're looking at of the Ethics Commission. I'll tell you right now, the Ethics Commission has 5 individuals serving on the Ethics Commission. Of those 5, there's a vacancy. So that's 4 seats. One of those 4 is on year 7 of their term. It's a 5-year term now. They're on year 7.
How's that happen?
Just not reappointed. Just not addressed. Another individual has already passed their term. So that's 2 of them. that are already past their term. You add that with the vacancy, you have a quorum of the Ethics Commission that has just passed their term or not appointed through this. You only have two
that's not valid,
that are actually serving their current term. That's just not right. And people, I've seen the articles, I've already gotten the calls from the reporters, and you probably know the names of the reporters already. The articles are already been written, and it's saying, you're going to weaken our ethics laws, you're trying to take the independence of the Ethics Commission, and you're trying to take them their oversight away. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to say we have a rogue Ethics Commission. I'm not trying to say we have a rogue ethics director. But if we did, there's nothing we could do about it in the laws in Alabama right now.
Okay, the path of recourse for that is?
I think oversight. I think Senate confirmation for the ethics director, the same way you have for the examiner of public accounts, has to come back up. You know, the Ethics Commission can still appoint the director that they want. It has to be confirmed by the Senate. It would have to be the bill that I have. They'd have to be reconfirmed in 5 years. So just to go through that process, there's also an impeachment process put in there. If somebody is going rogue, if somebody's going off the rails, there has to be some.
So there's no mechanism right now, Matt, to do that?
They are appointed by the Ethics Commission.
Somebody turns into like Nero on the Ethics Commission and just doing crazy stuff. There's no recourse.
No recourse. None.
Oh, wow.
Somebody could sit on the board of a trust and have their kid go to college from Texas and not be paid and that money come out of that trust. There's no recourse.
Well, so we've heard.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, just saying. Just heard stories like that. I mean, in this, in your bill, it said it would strike from the existing law the vague thing of value, in quotes, in current anti-bribery law and make it a Class B felony to accept or offer anything with a corrupt intent to a public servant or anything closely associated with a public servant is currently a Class C felony. That's the tough one. I mean, I love the spirit of that. Like, if my intent, if I give you a gift, and I'm not trying to, I just give you a gift because whatever, you know, you're not voting on something. Then the intent is important, but then does that get into being subjective there? And
it is, and that's the point of what we're doing. So what this bill will do is it'll take the bad things and put them under the jurisdiction of the district attorney and the AGs, the things that can get you sent to prison or jail, the criminal acts.
So those come out of the purview of the Ethics Commission, and now it goes into the regular legal system.
Now it goes into the regular legal system.
I like that.
You have an opportunity for a DA is going to have to prove to a jury, hey, this is what the intent, this is what they are. Go through this process. It's not this convoluted mishmash of, well, is this criminal, is this not? Well, is this, you know, quasi through this? It's simple. If you commit a crime, these are the people that can prosecute you. There's no back and forth through there. Again, I'm not saying that these things happen, but I've heard rumblings of someone saying, hey, this could potentially be a criminal act that we could refer you to the district attorney or AG for prosecution, or you could just pay a fine and we can resolve it administratively and you don't have to worry about going to prison.
Okay, wait. So if the Ethics Commission doesn't hand it over to the district attorney, the district attorney can't by themselves go pursue that?
They can. That's the question of the quasi-jurisdictional stuff. They can go look at some of the stuff. You don't have to have the Ethics Commission, but you start getting in a situation of what can the Ethics Commission do? What can they not? For an example, and this is a big fight we had last year, exculpatory evidence. Sean, lifetime prosecutor. Mm-hmm. Exculpatory evidence is one of the first things you're taught. If you have evidence that proves that someone did not commit that crime or did not commit that offense, you have to give it over.
Right.
It's called a Brady violation. If you don't give it over, that case is kicked. You lose that case immediately from the judge. The Ethics Commission fought a law that would have required them to give exculpatory evidence over. Fought it last year.
So
we had to pass that bill.
If they have evidence that this thing was not an ethics violation, and they don't hand that information over, nothing happens to them.
Nope. No, we changed the law last year to require them. They were saying that it was falling under grand jury secrecy and they didn't have to give it over because they couldn't give it over because it's not officially indictment yet. So there's a convoluted game of they were trying to catch up how they could hide the ball. They fought the legislature from passing that bill last year, but we passed it anyway without them. We pass it to make sure you have to give exculpatory evidence. And again, I'm not saying this is happening, but this is what I'm hearing them saying, well, if we just don't create a report, then there's no exculpatory evidence to give over. So now they're just not creating
reports. Wait, so they know the thing, but they didn't put it in a report, so therefore it doesn't exist?
I'm not saying that's happening. I'm saying I've heard that happening. Uh-huh. And if that is happening, there's currently no recourse for us in the legislature to do anything about it.
My gut says it's criminal. You're saying the law says it's not.
I'm saying
before this change.
I'm saying that the Attorney General has stripped the Deputy Attorney General status from any of the executive, from any of the Ethics Commission investigators or attorneys right now.
Wow. What about the the changes to the revolving door law that bans legislators from lobbying in the State House for a certain period to 2 years? Where does that stand now? What is this address?
So right now, the stance is 2 years. So if you get out of office, you have 2 years
before you can go back
and lobby against them. Now, it currently also says 2 years from the end of your term. So we had a couple of legislators, Kyle South in Tuscaloosa and Clay Schofield in North Alabama in that area. They left the legislature this session. So they would be barred for 5 years from lobbying because it's till the end of their term.
Gotcha. If you leave early. Okay.
Now what my bill what this proposal would be 2 year mandatory requirement you can't lobby, or the end of your term, whichever is longer. So if you leave with 3 years, you still can't lobby for 3 years, but I'm not adding an addition. I'm not tacking on an additional two.
Right.
I'm not making it a 5 year ban to come through there. My philosophy on this is if somebody doesn't want to be in the legislature, let them go.
Right.
The worst thing you could do is have people forced to stay in the legislature. Hey, I got to get a paycheck to feed my family, so the only thing I can do is this, so I need to stay in the legislature. That's how you get people just staying around forever to go through this process. I've never once looked at somebody and said, hey, you used to serve in the legislature. Let me make sure I vote for what you want me to do. You don't have any control. You either have a vote or you don't.
Well, that's the thing that I understand where lobbyists come from, but I put it incumbent upon y'all, the elected officials, to say no.
Right.
I mean, the voice of the lobbyist, often say this, a private enterprise I like because I know what their motivations are, right? They're going to do, listen, if I was one of these players in this gambling thing, I'd be trying to carve out my own, sweet deal as well. But then it's on y'all, the elected officials, to say no.
One of the best pieces of advice that I got when I first started was from Jim Hill, who serves on the Judiciary Committee with me. He said, listen, if you can't take their campaign contribution, go to dinner with them, and then still tell them no, you don't deserve to be in Montgomery anyway. If you don't have the guts to stand up and tell somebody no, and if you think you're friends and, oh, well, we're really good friends, so we're going to do this. Well, if you're only friends, if you tell them yes, then you aren't really good friends anyway.
So true.
You've got to be able to tell people no. And I think that's important to understand that you've got to get good people.
Get this one here from Dan Yankee on the text line. Said, teachers are required to watch a training video on ethics from the Alabama Ethics Commission every year. It's a pretty poor quality video, but it covers all the laws. The teacher part of it, too. I mean, this goes back to years ago when they talked about the de minimis thing. I mean, if they want to give Mrs. Smith a dang gift because Mrs. Smith kicked butt and got the kid to understand math or something, this isn't the same as a brown bag of money shoved. I mean,
that's exactly what this bill does. We're changing the de minimis to $100. Anything less than $100 is considered, and it's not a gift. We're taking teachers out and we're looking at the influence. If you're trying to influence them, yes, that's bad. Like if you're trying to influence
if little Timmy passes, here's this.
But that's bribery. That's something that you have an issue with.
But what if little Timmy, this teacher just clicked with little Timmy and little Timmy had a great year and I'm like, thank you. You're the first teacher who got through to him.
That's exactly what this bill will allow to happen. You can give a gift to your teachers. We're focused, again, we focus so much on the language of attacking the 140 legislators. We're not focusing on the everyday individual worker who works for the city or works for the county or works for the state that are affected by these laws. So, for instance, a statement of economic interest. Why does it matter what the city maintenance worker or what a teacher has on their statement of economic interest? They're not making decisions. They're not having any spending authority to come through this. They are run-of-the-mill employees doing their job and going to do their job that has zero influence on how tax dollars are spent. Why are we caring? Why are we trying to pry and just focus so much on this? We lose so many people from saying it's just not worth the headache of working for the state. It's just not worth the landmines that are there that if you try to either run for office or you try to be an employee, you try to get on these commissions, you're going to you open yourself up to all these landmines that nobody knows what they are. I want the best and the brightest to be there. I want the teachers to go home and know, hey, I'm not, if somebody really appreciates what I'm doing, I can be appreciated. And that's not just a $25 gift certificate to Starbucks.
Right.
Let them, thanks, Joe Biden, $25 probably buys three Starbucks now.
Right. Well, yeah, and this guy, a bigger idea here is, you're talking about people working in government. I see this at a federal level and a state level. And I have friends that do. work. And it's like so much of the conversation, not so much, it's not fair. Part of the conversations I will have will be about them saying, here's the things I can't do. I'm not saying illegal things, but they spend so much time going, well, here's the things you can't do versus thinking, here's what I can do. It's so different from me, who's been in private sector forever, that, you know, I'm all about where's the hustle? How are you going to make this company better? In this case, would be government better. Whatever your butcher, baker, candlestick maker for the state, do that job best versus going, well, as long as I don't do this, this, and this, then I don't get in trouble and I can just... I don't have to do great. I just don't I just can't do these things.
If you box yourself into a corner and say, as long as I just stay within this box and never try to challenge the system, never do anything outside the ordinary, never try to exceed, you'll do fine.
That's
terrible.
I know. And that's the same at state and federal level.
It is.
There's this whole, it's a culture of, and there's brilliant people, but they get stuck in that. And they're like, well, I'd like to do such and such, but if I just don't do these things, then I'll be able to retire at this level. Coming back, more with Representative Simpson right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, a few minutes left here with District 96 Representative Matt Simpson on Midday Mobile. Okay, look at it, you know, gambling, look at ethics. I also want to talk school choice. Of course, Governor Ivey made that one of her, not her key point in her State of the State address. I was talking to Jeff at the end of his show. I know last session, when it was talked about school choice, I was like, yeah, people are into school choice. And then I'd have different members of the legislature on, and I got different kind of versions of what school choice meant. Do we have one version now of what it means?
No, I don't think there's any. I think if you asked 100 people, there'd be 100 different opinions of what actual school choice means. What it means to me, and okay, I'll tell you my interpretation, is competition. It means not having a monopoly on what happens for a school system in that district. We're blessed in Baldwin County to have such wonderful schools, wonderful school system, wonderful school superintendent. Eddie Tyler is wonderful. Our school board is wonderful at what they're doing. Our schools are doing very well. Not every county is Baldwin County.
Sure.
My concern is what happens to that kid, because we're state representatives. I'm not just Baldwin County representative, right, but state representative. What happens to that kid in Perry County or Dallas County that's in a failing school, whose parents were in a failing school, whose their parents were in a failing school? How do you break that cycle? How do you give them an opportunity to not continue so their kids don't stay in that failing school? How do you make sure that there's a chance to get out of that spiral? And it can't just be, they're a failing school, we need to give more money and throw more money at them. Competition breeds that access. Competition breeds to say, you know what? If school X is not doing what they need to do for my kids, I want to be able to send my kid to school Y. That's school choice. That's what it means to me. Now, there's all kind of different things coming through. I believe the governor and the speaker and the budget chairs have all gotten an agreement on what this education savings account is to give people the opportunity for the system to come through. I am all for just competition. I've never voted against competition in the schooling system, and that's what I believe, and that's 1,000% what I believe. Now, if you're going to tell me if you want me to define what is school choice, I can't do that.
But we should say the key, the bulk of the lion's share of this year's discussion of school choice is ESA. Mm-hmm. It's that flexibility for the $7,000 or $7,200, right, to be able to travel with the student, which, as we pointed out, as people said, that it would hurt those other schools. Well, those other schools still get the county and city, or the federal money in there, right?
They get money to come in. You know,
so they have fewer students and still have more money in there.
If they have fewer students, maybe that's what they need to be able to allow those teachers to be able to spend more time with the students, the fewer students in there. I don't just believe in throwing money at the problem or money is the issue. I appreciate the phrase money following the student, but it's not just money following the student. It's making sure that a failing school isn't the monopoly on the system to make sure that there's options for other people. Some people may want to love their school system and love even though it is failing, because it's a weird dynamic. The definition of failing is like the lowest 8 scoring schools.
Right.
It doesn't matter if they're grades are, I look at it this way. If I got a C, it's a C grade. It doesn't look at it from the perspective of, well, you got a C, but 98%, 92% got Bs.
Right.
So that means you're a failing school. you know, we got to work on the definition of how that works. But if you're a real failing school, if you're a if your kids can't get
educated, do the kids know how to read and do math?
Exactly. Can kids learn? Do they know what they're doing? Can they pass a graduation exam? Can they do what everyone needs to come? If they can't do that, that's a failing school.
I agree with that. I agree with that. So, I mean, that goes on with numeracy and the you know, making sure our fourth graders can read.
Absolutely. Because that's the number one definition of poverty. If people can't read by third grade, that is the bellwether determination as to what they're going to. If you can't read on a third grade level by the time they're in third grade, that's a dangerous recipe. And unfortunately, we're feeling the consequences of that recipe right now because a lot of schools have kids that just move on because, oh, you're age appropriate. Well, you were born on this date, so that means we have to move you up. That's not right.
No, that's not right. And that is cruel to those students.
It doesn't give them a chance because if you can't read on a third grade level, you're not going to be able to pick it up by fifth grade.
No,
you're not going to be able to understand.
You're not going to learn the material because you can't read the words.
You can't read it. So you're lost starting at fourth grade, which mm-hmm. is 10 years old. What future do you have? What are we setting up for the future for these kids to come through? So why wouldn't we set it back and say, you know what, we're not going to just, you know, we're not just going to promote based on age anymore. We're not just going to say, hey, your birthday's here, so you have to move on. Let's look at it and say, there's nothing wrong with being held back. I promise you, if you're a second grader, it feels much easier being held back than if you're a ninth or 10th grader and you can't read.
Well said.
And so it may be uncomfortable for them for a little bit, but I'd rather them be uncomfortable at 6, 7 so they can really get the foundation than be uncomfortable at 16, 17 and they have no future.
We're going to pick this back up next time, Representative. Thank you for being here.